Sorry you weren't at school today.
I went to the doctor.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine.
What's wrong?
Girl problems.
Bad cramps.
Yeah.
I get those too. Pretty much run through a bottle of painkillers like every month.
Yeah, same.
Don't you ever just wish you were a dude?
All the time.
That was a clip from the new movie, Never Rarely Sometimes Always. We're going to talk about that and lots of other stuff on the latest edition of Sitting Around Talking Movies. I'm Neil Rosen, remotely. We're all remote, joined as always by Bill Brigoli.
I was always called remote.
And in the Tony Hamptons, although I don't think you're out and about enjoying that place very much, Bill McCuddy. How you doing?
I don't have a Tony yet, but I do have an Emmy and I was Oscar nominated. But thank you, Neil.
All right. So we're going to talk about, you saw Never Rarely Sometimes Always. But there's lots of other movies that we all saw and TV shows that you could binge. So thanks for joining us. And let's start out with Bill. Tell us about this movie.
Well, it's what you would call an indie art house kind of a film, but it got a lot of support coming out of Sundance and the Berlin Film Festivals, where it was audience favorites there, where it was very highly regarded, got into a pretty good little bidding war, and then was going to be theatrically released, obviously, and didn't. So now here we are in one of those $20 a view direct-to-television films like Ben Affleck's movie we talked about last week, which I finally saw and can recommend, and The Way Back. And this is a small film about a young girl from Pennsylvania who becomes pregnant, and with she and her cousin go to New York City to try and have an abortion. It's not a musical. There's nothing upbeat about it, but it's extremely well done. What was that? Was it Polish or German movie like 4 or 5 years ago called like 4 days, 30 hours, 27 minutes.
Right. I remember that.
This is very much in that mold. And the two women who star in it as 17 and 18-year-old checkout girls at a creepy convenience store, Ryan Eggold, Theodore Perlin, and Sharon Van Etten are the stars. And it was directed by a woman I've never heard of, Eliza Hittman. I highly, highly recommend this. It's not upbeat, but the performances are remarkable. And the title, Never Rarely, Sometimes Always, without giving too much away, comes from a scene when a social worker asks her a bunch of questions and she can answer one of those four words. This will be in a few top 10 lists, and if it holds up, may get to the Independent Spirit Awards.
Now, is this one of these movies that's like 1995 on demand or
yeah, that's what I said. It's in that $20 category of, you know, should have gotten into the theaters first, didn't. So the distributors have decided to put it up here with the new Pixar movie and the Ben Affleck movie we talked about and a lot of other films. And as I've said for the last couple of podcasts, I think this is the future. I mean, they've announced that there are no summer movies now. Everything's being pushed. The new Maverick film, the Tom Cruise thing, now a Christmas movie. Everything that was supposed to open in the summer, or many of the things that were supposed to open in the summer, we've learned in the last 72 hours are getting pushed to the end of the year. And we don't think there's going to be any major film festivals this summer. So, you know, this is the new normal. And not just because we're all stuck inside, but because if they make money at $20 a hit, the movie theaters will be upset, but the studios may never look back.
Well, this is going to radically, I mean, the movie theaters were hurting before any of this pandemic thing hit. I mean, if you just look in Manhattan or around New York City, all these movie theaters, as we've talked about over the years on the podcast, are closing. We did a campaign here on the podcast to keep open the Paris Theater, which fortunately Netflix bought, but they're just, you know, folding up left and right. So when this thing ends, I mean, I look at marquees on movie theaters in Manhattan now and they say, you know, we look forward to having you back one day and stuff. But I just wonder how many of these movie theaters will come back. I mean, will it be just the IMAX theater and one or two multiplexes? And
obviously it all depends on how safe people feel in group situations. If everyone gets this and gets through it and everyone feels safe, then I think people are going to show up at the movies in record numbers just to support it. I mean, I know that's kind of a Frank Capra kind of happy ending, but I hope that, I know it's going to happen for restaurants. I know that people are going to go jamming back into public places that feel like they've been under-supported through this. So I hope movie theaters, and I think Broadway, obviously, will benefit from that too. If that happens, then we're having a different conversation. But I think even if people go back to theaters in big numbers, that they're going to get used to seeing first-run movies day and date. And for $20, I think they'd rather stay home.
I think it's going to depend on how long this lasts. I think you're right about people going to get used to it. But down the line, if, you know, with any luck we get out of this thing, these movie theaters, I mean, I can't see the major studios releasing, you know, like their latest Avengers movies, you know, if there is an outlet to open a movie theater on a home screen. But who knows? I don't know what's going to happen.
I mean, we keep saying that, but, you know, if they do, and we keep saying everyone's going to want to see the new Avengers movie on a big screen. But the truth is, if they could get $50 for the new Avengers movie, let's say, and it made more in a weekend than it would have in theaters, you can kiss theaters goodbye, except for IMAX and very specialty houses.
Bill, are the movie companies revealing how much money they're making on video?
No, I was looking around for that. I can't get on the Box Office Mojo anymore because it's a subscription thing. But yeah, they're not, as far as I can find, no. So that's an interesting question. I would love to know. I mean, Netflix used to say how many total people showed up or how many downloads they did. And we'll talk about Tiger King because that's number one in a few minutes. But no, in terms of what would it have made in real dollars, you know, what have they made in real dollars for, let's say, The Way Back or the new Margot Robbie movie? What's that called? The follow-up to the...
Yeah, I know. It's her character in...
Or the new Pixar film. I mean, kids are Onward, is that called? Yeah, Onward. That kids are stuck at home now. I mean, you would think the Pixar movie would have made 50 or 100 million bucks last weekend. I don't know. We don't know yet.
Harley Quinn, is that what you were thinking of?
Yeah.
I did not look it up.
That's her character name. Is that the name of the movie?
I think it is.
Well, look, we don't have the answers right now, but we can talk about what you can see and what you should see.
Right. So let's talk about some other things that you can see. By the way, just on that note, not only is Tiger King number one right now on Netflix, and I'm going to talk about that in a second, but the movie Contagion from, like, what is it, like 2002, about the pandemic, that's like kicking ass on...
I know it was initially. Is it still? I mean, I've been telling people, I was on the Good Day New York today with Rosanna Scotto, and I was talking about how I really don't think we should be watching these pandemic movies. I think we should be watching comedies and musicals and things that sort of take us out of that world. But listen, it never gets old watching Gwyneth Paltrow die, don't get me wrong. But I think, you know, I think we should be watching fun stuff like Catastrophe and some of the things we talked about last week.
Have either of you guys watched? I saw the first episode of Tiger King because there was so much hype surrounding this. And I saw it with my wife.
Howard Stern's been talking about it every day. My wife and daughter love it.
But I was not, you know, pulled in by the first episode. I wasn't like, wow, this is great. I can't wait to get to the second episode. It's kind of like I'm going to perfunctorily go to the second episode because there's so much hype around it. But I wasn't blown away by the first episode.
Blown away by The Wire, but I know how I watched the first hour of that the other day for the first time, and I thought, this is The Wire, but I know that I'm wrong, so I know I'm going to stay with it.
Well, The Wire is a movie, is something, you know, that I am now going to, like you, McCuddy, I'm going to actually sit down and watch the whole thing because I have time on my hands. But everybody who's watched The Wire, and most people will tell you it's one of the greatest shows in the history of television, will tell you, and I've seen the first 3-4 episodes of The Wire. They say you've got to give it 5 or 6 episodes because the first 4 or 5 episodes apparently are very confusing, but everything comes together by like maybe the 5th or 6th episode,
right.
And then it becomes this addictive.
So are you going to go 5 or 6 with Tiger King?
Well, Tiger King, I think, is only 8 episodes in total, and I'll give it a couple more episodes because
they're going to make a biopic now about that guy, and the guy wants. He said Brad Pitt to play him. I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to, I can't give away what happens because I've kind of avoided reading spoilers. But what I've seen so far is the guy has a, like a, it's not really a zoo, it's a wildlife park where he charges admission and he has all these tigers and other cat, you know, feline, huge animals that it's kind of crazy. But again, look, what was that movie with the guy that hunted the crocodiles and stuff? I mean, that was a big hit and I was never, and I think he...
Crocodile Dundee?
No. This was like a, this was like a reality show about some
Jeff
guy.
Irwin?
Yeah. And he died, right? Didn't he die?
But yeah, but it wasn't a crocodile. It was a fish.
It was a manta ray or something that got in the way of.
Right. So, you know, that wasn't particularly my thing. So I don't know if this is going to be particular. I mean, the Kardashians aren't particularly my thing and they're a highly rated show. So I don't know if I'm going to like this, but the first episode, yeah, it didn't really move me that much, but okay.
All right. I'm going to, my wife and daughter love it. I'm going to go for it.
I'm going to continue watching. And
Rigoli, we'll will you watch this?
I don't know. I was grossed out just looking at the picture of the guy.
He's a looker.
Yeah. Holy cow. He's not a handsome fella.
Hey, back to The Wire for 30 seconds. We would be remiss not mentioning that HBO has offered The Wire as one of the things, 500 hours of programming starting today as we're recording this on a Friday, that you download HBO Now. You can't get it on your cable box if you still have cable, but you can get it on your computer. So you download HBO Now. It's got Barry. It's got The Sopranos. It's got a lot of programming, and they're offering that free, so that deserves a mention.
Yeah, that's good. That's a nice thing. A shout out to them. Bill Bregoli.
Yes, sir.
There's a series that I want to watch and my wife wants to watch that you want to talk about.
Right.
Tell us about Unorthodox.
I went in thinking I'll just watch one or two episodes. I watched all four and there are only four. They're an hour long.
That's it.
They're just, it's a limited series.
They're not coming back for a second season.
No, I don't think so. It's based on a book, and I think the book ends at a certain point, and that's where they end the series.
Okay.
The book it's based on is by a woman named Deborah Feldman. It's a memoir she wrote called Unorthodox, The Scandalous Rejection of My Hasidic Roots. And I know that's a title that just screams to be made, but it's true. It's based on a true story, mostly, loosely from what I heard. About this woman who escaped her ultra-Orthodox community in Williamsburg, and she fled to Germany because of some quirk in German law. She actually found out she had German citizenship. So she goes back to Germany, and the rabbi sends her ex-husband or her husband and this kind of heel of the movie named Moisha to go find her in Germany. And believe me, the thing opens like a thriller. The first like 10, 15 minutes, she's rushing to get out of Williamsburg. But 95% of it was shot in Berlin. It's a German production.
Mrs. McCuddy loved it. I saw about 20 or 25 minutes of it, including a very painful sex scene, literally painful for her. And it definitely drops you into that world and shows you a completely separate existence. And then she kind of reminded me of sort of a Natalie Portman kind of thing going on when she cuts all her hair off. And
yeah, she's her name is Shira Haas, and she's an Israeli actor, actually. And she had to be taught. Luckily, they had an advisor who taught everyone Yiddish. Movies in Yiddish, a little bit of English, and some German, but plenty of subtitles, so don't worry.
Right. So, well,
I was captivated by the thing. I was just going to watch one, and I killed 4 hours watching.
You know who was raving about this is Mark Harris. I don't know if either of you follow him on Twitter, but he's a former Entertainment Weekly writer, and he's written a couple of outstanding books on Hollywood. And whatever I find that he likes, I generally will do. And he was raving about it the other day. He came to it lately. I don't know how long it's been up.
Not very long, about a week. At the end of the fourth episode, Netflix switches you over to a making of. It's only 20 minutes, but it's pretty amazing how they got all the right hair and costumes and spent a lot of time in Brooklyn studying those people.
There's another series whose title escapes me about Hasidic community that the whole thing is in Hebrew, and I can't think of the name of the series, but my wife watched this and she was actually captivated by it. It would be great if Schistel
remembered it. Yeah, it'd be great if you remembered it.
Schistel, something like that. I don't know. I will try to find out.
Yeah. I saw that. I mean, I didn't watch it, but I saw it. Yeah, you're close. It's Schistel or something.
All right. I'm gonna cheat and look it up.
All right. While you do that, let me quickly recommend a John Hughes kind of teen comedy called Banana Split. I watched it with my daughter. It's way above average. It's also
I was right. Schistel. Good. I'm sorry.
Schistel. Good. I'll look for that. Your song of names that you were so high on.
Out on DVD now.
Song of Names.
Song of Names.
Yeah, with Tim Roth and Clive Owen. I didn't care for it, but you loved it. That's available on a lot of
streaming services
now, and something weird called Almost Love, which looks like a bad rom-com based in New York. One of those multi-storyline things. But if you're in the Patricia Clarkson, who was a big fan of our television show, or at least said she was once, is in it. And so that looks passable.
I highly recommend the Song of Names. We talk, by the way, we usually say this at the end of the show, but I don't know when this podcast is going to be posted, but we're taping it, recording it on April 3rd in the afternoon on a Friday. Our roundtable critic show, which we actually somehow managed to do remotely with Bill McCuddy in pajamas. We did it on Zoom. The CUNY TV show.
I'm wearing the same robe right now.
It's on CUNY TV tonight, Friday, April 3rd at 9:30. And it also will be repeated over the weekend. If you guys who are listening, guys and gals, want it, we make lots of recommendations. And Lisa Rossman, Bill McCuddy, myself, and Mike Sargent. And
guys and gals, is this American Bandstand?
Well,
and we'll have a link to it at some point, I assume.
Well, I'm going to, after it airs tonight at 9:30, if you follow me on Twitter at Neil Rosen Apples, there's a YouTube link and I will tweet it out, but it's also on tomorrow, Saturday, April 4th at 8 a.m. and 4 p.m. And it's on Sunday at 7 a.m. And then it's on all next week. So just go to CUNY, tv.cuny.edu or just Google CUNY TV, you know, on Google and put in Talking Pictures with Neil Rosen. You can find it all the times. Or again, follow me on Twitter at Neil Rosen Apples and look for the link on YouTube. It's a lot of fun.
As painful as that may be, it might be worth it for the link.
And Cuddy's funny and everybody's good. And we actually did the show remotely. You know, a couple of quick things you might want to look at. Larry David has a 2-minute public service announcement that you could just find on YouTube about the coronavirus, which is kind of funny if you're a Larry David fan, where he's kind of telling everybody, what are you complaining about? You're just getting home to stay home. You're just getting to stay home and watch television. And it's kind of funny. So that's a quick 2 minutes you might want to watch.
And we mentioned last week how I love this season of Curb, and I finally saw the finale, and it's a work of art. I mean, it really is. Talk about something that after, I think, 10 episodes, pulls all the storylines back together and had a really surprising ending involving Mocha Joe. I won't say blown away, but it was considering how he'd gotten kind of bad for the 8th and 9th. I don't know bad, but I thought he'd a little bankrupt in a couple of episodes in the last few seasons.
We talked about this. I agree with you. I think the last few seasons were flat, but I think he came back strong with this season. And I mentioned this to you last week, but you hadn't seen the final episode. But did you like the celebrity cameos that popped up in that episode?
I mean, you got Sean Penn to be on.
Sean Penn and Jonah Hill, kind of fun, right?
Mila Kunis. I mean, yeah, the Jonah Hill thing was very funny. Anyway, I don't want to give – we shouldn't say why those people are on it because the whole concept is good.
That's it. Just watch. I'm going to mention that a guy that you probably don't know the name, or most of you probably don't know the name, a guy by the name of Adam Schlesinger died from coronavirus. He was in this group called Fountains of Wayne, but his movie connection is he wrote this really great song. It was the title track to the movie, That Thing You Do, which was directed and starred Tom Hanks, and Liv Tyler was in it. And
I love that song, actually.
It's a great song. And the whole movie is about, if you remember the movie, is about this band that has a one-hit wonder. And that song is this song that they create called That Thing You Do. And Adam Schlesinger wrote that song. And the song is played like dozens of times throughout the movie because they start playing it in little high school gymnasiums. Then they get on like a Dick Clark type show. Then they, you know, they go on tour and play the song. And the song never gets tiring. It's just a terrific song. And this guy wrote that song. He also wrote the theme to Crank Yankers. And he wrote a lot of stuff. And rest in peace, Adam Schlesinger. I really love That Thing You Do, and I really love that song. It was a really good song, and he wrote it. And just one of the many fatalities of this horrible virus that's going around.
Yeah, we lost a colleague in William Wolfe, the theater and movie critic.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He was in his 80s, but that was a guy that the three of us would see at screenings all the time, a larger-than-life kind of character. And it was complications from Corona, which is becoming kind of a broad stroke of saying someone who was going to die of pneumonia anyway got coronavirus. I'm not trying to downplay this thing at all. I think we have to call it what it is, but older people who we know are more at risk are dying and they're calling it Corona. And anyway, he was a guy that we saw at screenings and stuff and was a pretty big deal in the 60s and 70s in film criticism.
Yeah, I remember him. Well, that's sad. You know, I've stopped watching for the most part the news, and I'm getting my just the way you said, McCuddy, that we should be watching, you know, fun stuff and not like Contagion. I'm getting my news. We touched upon this last week a little bit, but you wrote me that you wanted to talk about it, McCuddy, from late night talk shows, which are kind of a saving grace. They give you the same news, but at least they put a comedic spin on it. You had written me that you think that Kimmel and Fallon are doing a very similar kid-influenced show. I don't think that Kimmel's doing a kid-influenced show. I think that
Opening of it is drawn by his daughter.
That's it. It's like eight seconds.
They're both doing it from home in what's obviously like a playhouse in Fallon, it is a playhouse. He built a barn in the back for his kids that is great. But Kimmel's it's in his party room or something badly decorated, weirdly designed. But Kimmel looks like he's got a bigger crew there and everything technically is working better. Fallon says his wife holds a selfie camera and some of his video when he goes into another room to do these celebrity interviews and he wants some quiet, the video is really poor. He's doing it on his phone. Kimmel looks like he's got professional cameras there and there's a little more editing involved, it looks like. And what I mean is post-production. So
look, I credit Fallon for actually doing a show, but both my wife and I felt that although it was cute with the first couple of episodes with the kids interrupting Fallon's monologue and climbing all over his head, you know, while he's trying to do the show, that kind of got tiring after.
Well, my daughter Lily, who's 20 and home from, or 19 and home from University of Michigan, watched Fallon's monologue and got through two jokes and said, "I can't watch this. It's too painful for him."
It is too painful. I mean, it's like put the kids in the other room and do the monologue. He can't even get through the jokes. Where Kimmel, on the other hand, is, you know, other than what you said, McCuddy, those, you know, the kids drawing, you don't see the kids, and he's doing a monologue, and I think it's actually works, the fact both with Kimmel and Seth Meyers and Colbert and Trevor Noah, who's just terrific, it works without the audience. You know, they both kind of play to the fact that there's not an audience and say, like, that joke would have bombed without it. Like, what did Seth Meyers did a reference the other day to the comic strip character Andy Cap, and he goes, you know, if I did this joke in front of an audience, it would have been dead silence because nobody would have gotten the reference, but I'm getting dead silence anyway. So what is it?
Yeah, no, that's good. That's playing the room correctly.
Right. Exactly.
And he's not like a John Oliver who's never, you watched that show last
week. John Oliver was great last week. Just terrific.
But does he normally have an audience or not?
Yes, he does.
Okay,
oh, yeah. I've seen him load him in.
He seems
filmed in the building where Bill Bregoli, works, but closed now, but the CBS Broadcast Center, yeah. Absolutely.
Well, Oliver seems very comfortable without an audience. It's interesting to watch people because there's a manicness to, and I like Jimmy Fallon a lot, and he's shooting that show about a quarter of a mile from my house. I can ride my bike by it every day and watch him filming stuff. But he's got kind of a manic personality that almost requires an audience. And I think he's the least successful.
I agree.
He's getting an A for effort. I'm really happy he's doing it.
Yeah, I'm glad that he's making the effort.
He had a really embarrassing thing with Lady Gaga the other night. Did you see that? He was advertising, talked about her on Stern and she was going to be on tonight and stuff. And she kind of blew him off. He gets her on the phone. I thought it was a gag. And then she goes, can we do this Monday? I can't really do this now. And he's talking to her live on the show.
Wow.
So anyway, I feel badly for him in some regards. I think Kimmel's doing a little better job just from the look and feel of it. Everybody who's doing it, gets a standing ovation from me, no matter what it looks like.
I agree. I mean, they're all out there and it's really it's comforting. I mean, instead of you turn on the nightly news and it's like watching this horrific horror story, so at least, and again, you're getting the same news from these talk shows. Even Trevor Noah referenced that. He goes, don't watch that, watch this. I'll tell you the headlines, but I'll make it more palatable for you. And indeed he does. I mean, not that it makes it better, but it's not like watching Lester Holt just frightening the shit out of you. But at least all these talk show guys will give you the news and at least put some comedic punchline on it, and you're like, we're all in this together, and make you laugh. And speaking of comedians, I have not gotten to this show, Bill Bregoli, but I'd like you to talk about it. Spill the beans and don't wait for me. Called Feel Good, that you watched, and why don't you talk about that show and tell everybody about
it. I was telling you, Neil, you should see it because you love shows about aspiring comedians.
I do.
Not just, right. You're not, she's not just aspiring. She actually is one. And she plays this aspiring comedian who is on stage one night at a club in England. She's Canadian. She meets someone named George. They fall in love. And eventually, talking to her mother, played by Lisa Kudrow, George finds out that Mae Martin is a recovering addict. Her mother goes, shouldn't you be going to finding a meeting? And George is like, well, what do you mean meeting? And what I didn't tell you, Neil, because I wanted to surprise you, is that George is actually short for Georgina. It's a woman.
Oh, okay.
Wait, I'm lost in this whole thing. So she's a stand-up. She meets who she thinks is a guy, but it's somebody.
No, she isn't. Georgina, she knows she's a woman, but her character's name is George. Everyone calls her George.
Okay.
And George's problem is that George won't admit to her family that she's dating a woman she never had before.
I'm going to watch this.
And who has an addiction problem, or who should be going to meet him?
Mae Martin has the addiction problem. And Lisa Kudrow, when you meet her, you realize why Mae Martin's character has an addiction problem.
I haven't seen this. I want to. Lisa Kudrow, I'll watch anything. And I love the little
first few episodes, she's just on the phone. You just see her face, but later on they meet in person in England, and the episodes are short. They're less than 30 minutes long. There are only six of them.
Okay. Here's some news. Chris Maloney, I'm a big SVU fan. Either of you guys watch Law & Order SVU?
I really don't. I've probably seen all the regular Law & Orders 5 or 10 times. It drives my wife crazy. You've seen this one. Switch. But
We do something different. We watch SVU, which, and it's, I think now in its 21st season, is the longest running 1 hour drama television series in the history of television. And there's so many episodes because there's so many.
Is that the one Ice Cube is on, or Ice? One of the Ices is on.
Yes, that Ice T. Yeah. And we'll do the same thing. We'll watch it, and all the seasons are up on Netflix. And he goes, did we ever see this episode? And Michael goes, yeah, but I don't remember it. Yeah, I don't remember it either. You just watch it again because there's like thousands of episodes. Well, anyway, for the first 12 seasons.
Thousands of episodes, and all Ice-T ever says is, damn, how did this happen?
No, Ice-T is great. He's the comic relief in the thing. He's terrific, especially when he plays different characters. But Chris Maloney, with the first 12 seasons, it was Mariska Hargitay and Chris Maloney were partners, and they were solving special victims unit crimes. And he played a character called Elliot Stabler. And after 12 seasons, I think Chris Maloney was in some kind of contract dispute and said he demanded X amount of dollars, and they wouldn't pay him the money. And he walked away from the show. That's my understanding of it. And then the show became like 20 times popular than it ever was. And it keeps increasing in the ratings, to my understanding. So now if production ever comes back, because right now all production is shut down, Chris Maloney is coming back in a special 8-part series as Elliot Stabler in a Law & Order SVU. And it's probably going to be crossover episodes also. So if you're an SVU fan, that's exciting news. If you like the show,
because you know that Dick Wolf has licensed that to like other countries, and there's like a UK version, and that UK version is on, and the British seem to make everything better, so I want to see it, except Dentistry. But it's Law & Order UK is either on Netflix or Amazon.
Hmm. Okay, interesting. Good to know. Good to know. And Bill, there's a British, since you just said that everything British is better, there's something called Retribution that you saw?
Yeah, this is another 4-hour, and it really could have been 8. I mean, it's chock-loaded with so many subplots. But a husband and wife come back from their honeymoon, and they're murdered. She's pregnant. And the two families of the bride and groom knew each other very well, grew up in outside of Edinburgh, Scotland, on adjacent farms. So these two families are devastated. On top of that, and I'm not giving too much away, in the first 10 minutes, the guy who killed the groom and bride shows up at their farm, and they take the law into their own hands. I'm making this sound slightly better than it is, because it it has a jaw-dropping or eye-rolling ending, depending on your point of view. I mean, it's got a real... Put it this way, you liked Neil Rosen, the ending of The Secret, or what was that one?
The Stranger?
Like
No. I said that The Stranger, which you recommended to me, and we talk about on the television show Talking Pictures with Neil Rosen, which is on all this weekend and all this month on CUNY TV.
There's no short version of that?
What's that?
There's no short version of that plug, Neil.
I said that I love the series, and I thank you, McCuddy, for recommending it to me. I said I thought the ending was a little haphazard, and they wrapped up too many plot points.
Well, this is trying to have an oh my god ending.
But even though I didn't think the ending was great, I thought it was okay. All right. The series was great.
Right. I love it when you diverge back into.
Well, you told me I love the ending of The Strangers. The opposite.
No, yeah, I stand corrected. So it's 4 hours. We were ultimately glad we watched it, because it's got some great people in it that you'll recognize from a lot of other things. I want to mention quickly that Turner Classic Movies continues to seem to know or have hidden away all their best movies, because yesterday or the day before, out of nowhere, in the middle of the day, starting at 10 in the morning, it was all Kurosawa movies all day long. 7-7-1,
wow.
The Hidden Fortress, like all these movies that were like, oh my god, where they must have license for. Lisa Rossman talks about the Criterion Channel, and I'm sure that's great, but Turner Classic Movies these days, for my money, is stepping it up nicely.
Well, you talk about on the show, on the TV show, you talk about Turner Underground Channel.
Yeah, I think we talked about that last week on the podcast, but yeah, in the middle of the night, there's somebody programming that really interestingly too, because they do little themes with two or three movies from like 1 in the morning to like 6 in the morning. And it can be anything from blaxploitation, I think we talked about, to just like B-movie, drive-in movies, or spaghetti westerns, just like crazy. So I recommend that. And finally, I'm really late to this, but my daughter and I watched the other night, Ready or Not. That's the bloody movie where the girl comes home to on her wedding night. Well, they have the wedding at this mansion of this eccentric family, and they have to play a game that night, and it turns out to be hide and seek, and she is it, and they're all trying to kill her.
Right.
And it's wild and over the top and reminds me of The Hunt. So Rosen, you'll hate it, but it's.
No, this sounds. This actually sounds. This sounds interesting, and I like the title because Ready or Not is what. When you play hide and seek, Ready or Not, here I come. You know, right?
There may or may not be a curse on the family. They have to sacrifice the bride that night.
Oh my God!
And
where can I watch this?
Andy McDowell is in this thing as the mom. That's on all platforms right now too. Ready or Not?
Oh, it's a movie. It's not a series.
Yeah, no, it's a movie.
And it's not British.
No, it's not.
Okay.
Everybody's teeth look good.
Well, I want to talk about Ozark, which is back for season 3 with Jason Bateman and Laura Linney and Julia Garner. And, you know, I'm in the midst of it, watched a few episodes. And I got to tell you, this is it's such a good show. The first two seasons were great.
Get a casino, right?
Yes, it has not jumped the chart.
So listen, do me a favor. Everybody who's listening to this may or may not be in the same boat as me. Remember how I said last week you could jump back into Westworld having not watched all of the seasons or whatever?
You said that jump the shark and it jumped back.
This looks to me like I don't need to catch up. It looks like I know that they're living in the Ozarks. I know they're laundering money. Can I just come back to it without backpedaling through season 2? Can I just start watching season 3 of Ozark?
Okay, if that's your question, I'm going to say absolutely not. First of all, why would you even want to? Because season 1 and season 2 are brilliant, and there's so much
I told you the problem I had with it in season 2 was that the bait shop was making $10 million a year. Like, they were running money through all these little moms.
It's about money laundering.
Of course, but they were running millions and millions of dollars through these like little corner grocery stores. It was completely ridiculous.
Well, I don't know how far you got into season 2, but there's a whole other plot where it was really going through a Latin American cartel and people in the Ozarks.
That was from channel one. That was from season 1. That's the whole setup.
No, just listen, I would definitely watch season 1 and season 2. Can you watch season 3 as a standalone? Yeah, I guess you could, but there's so much to miss. And again, why would you bother? Season 1 and season 2 are good. In season 3, they do open up this riverboat casino. Laura Linney is going a little power crazy. And Jason Bateman just kind of wants to get out of the whole thing. So there's tension in their marriage. He wants to kind of, you know, what's that line in The Godfather? The more they pull me in, the more what's that Pacino line?
Every time I try and get out, they suck me back in.
Right. Yeah. So he's trying to get out of the thing. And she just wants to get more entrenched. And great, we could run a casino and we could open up another casino. We could buy that and we'd be legitimate.
That sounds like Mrs. McCuddy.
And there's a lot of subplots involving, Julia Garner and their kid and the cartel members and this lawyer who was in season 2. I don't want to give away what happens to her, but she becomes a more prominent character who represents the cartel. And it's quite good. So if you like Ozark, the first two seasons, no, do not skip them. Watch the whole series if you haven't seen it. And if you have seen the first two seasons, enjoy, binge watch it on Netflix. It's very good that Ozark is back. Why don't you talk about, we said we didn't have time, but we have a couple of minutes.
You've got to get this. You've got an important booking at 4:15.
That's right.
I had to do another show at 4 o'clock.
Oh God. We're all just so busy, 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 busy. I wanted Bill Bregoli to talk about the new season of Babylon Berlin, since I was talking about the new season.
Well, briefly, it's a new season. It's a really, really expensive looking, German show. About an investigator, a criminal investigator during 1920s Berlin. And things are just ramping up with the Nazis by this season. You see a few of them, but they're not quite there yet. There's a murder mystery that's the basis of this new season. And it's a woman who gets killed, an actress gets killed while shooting a musical. And
the whole series is a musical, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of music in it, but it's not done like a musical.
I saw the first couple of episodes of season
Yeah, the first season.
I was struck by, there's a tremendous amount of music in it. And also, it was expensive.
Yeah.
I know people who are really, really, really into this show, and I tried to get into it. I've got time now, so I will revisit, but I think I only got How many is in a season? Do you know, like eight?
There are 12 episodes per season.
So I'm only like 2 or 3 hours into season one. And this is the second season?
This is the third.
Oh, man.
And I heard they've already done a fourth. So,
and you recommend it, Brigola.
Recommend it. But yeah, again, you got to pay attention to the plot. They wind from the first season. There are plot things that haven't even been resolved yet in the third season.
And it's still during World War II?
Pre-World War II. It's 1920. Okay. This particular season ends as the stock market collapses in 1929.
And like McCuddy's question to me, there's no way to jump into this in the third season.
No. You can kind of watch it just for the production value.
I don't see
that good.
We're all at home. We've got plenty of time on our hands. To your question, McCuddy, why would you want to even jump into a later season of something? You know,
Calm down.
I'm telling you, calm down. All right, close it out, McCuddy, with the something called Top Gear that you wrote me that you wanted to talk about.
Oh yeah, those guys, the politically incorrect Jeremy Clarkson and James May, and the three of them had the number one show on the BBC forever. And then they said some politically incorrect stuff. They got bounced, and that was called Top Gear. And now it's called Grand Touring, GT. And they're doing exactly the same thing. I would bet they hired all the same producers from the BBC.
The ones they didn't punch in the face. Jeremy didn't punch.
Yeah, there have been some really kind of fascinating behind the scenes stories about these guys, but I highly recommend to jump back into it almost anywhere. This is one you can see one or the all. I like to go through and see the cars there. It's basically a mashup between Motor Week or a car show and a travelogue show. So they'll take three cars and drive them across Russia. They're funny. The shows are about an hour and 15 or 20 minutes. You can tell they have scads of dough to spend on it. And they get great cars. So
pun intended, a show like this is definitely in your wheelhouse, Bill McCuddy. You know, it's about cars, and we know how you love cars. And, speaking of, by the way,
alone there.
You know, they pushed it. We talked about this like a couple of months ago that they pushed the new Bond film, No Time to Die, to Thanksgiving? And I actually started thinking to myself, I wonder if that's actually going to be possible, if they're actually going to be able to release it in theaters on Thanksgiving to bring this.
If by Thanksgiving there are not theaters, I guarantee they will put it into homes.
Man.
They're just not going to push everything back a year or 18 months. They're going to eventually have to. And think about when movie theaters open, how many movies are going to be available.
When you mean the things that have just been on the shelf that the studios decided not to put like online?
They'll get a week, and if they don't hit, they're gone.
Since you brought it up, the way this used to be played was like a giant chessboard. Yeah. They would take the whole summer, all of the studios would start to program and counter-program each other. And so they have no idea. That's like on a rolling basis now, week by week, starting probably, the optimistic ones are probably starting in July, saying maybe we'll be able to go back that early. What are we going to fill the screens with? And when it comes to big stuff like that, like Christmas and end of the year stuff, some people are talking about moving the Oscars back to where it used to be years and years and years ago into April, and maybe pushing the consideration for your consideration into the first or second month of next year. It's all up in the air. It's all up in the air. And we'll talk about it all next week, as we always do.
Next week, we're going to recommend a whole bunch of other stuff that you can watch while you're stuck at home during the coronavirus pandemic. And
we now watch the good and bad stuff, so you have to, you don't have to.
Yeah, there you go. And you could reach me at Neil Rosen Apples and look for that link for our TV show, Talking Pictures with Neil Rosen. Where we make more recommendations, and you could reach Bill Brigoli on Instagram at Bill Brigoli.
Yeah, why not? It's very original.
B Regoli.
That's right.
And I'm at Bill McCuddy. Thanks for all of you who continue to follow and support, and stay safe out there.
Stay safe. Be well. Thanks for sitting around talking movies and TV series to binge watch with us this week. We'll sit around talking movies and TV series to binge watch with you again next week.
Why don't you give that CUNY show one more plug, Neil?